You see what I'm saying? So that's what they really need to understand. What is important to that family unit?
Right.
I'm like smashing my keys right now. Because
right. And that goes back to the whole idea that fundamentally behavior analysis is about social significance. And there's just like some basic questions that we have to ask ourselves when we're in practice. Does the behavior I'm teaching matter? And again, it isn't about mattering to me, Sarah. It's about mattering to my client, mattering to my client's family.
Yes.
Does it matter? And are my procedures appropriate and socially acceptable? Which means that that needs to be acceptable to the family unit.
And does it work in that setting?
Right. Hey, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Beta.
And this is
The Scoop. But it's not about ice cream, people.
It's not about ice cream.
It's not about ice cream.
Okay, so at the beginning of this podcast, we decided that we need to start talking more about our current hip-hop faves.
Yes.
Because as Feta alluded to in our first episode, how do you categorize yourself? And again, this is in specific order.
In specific order. So I'm a parent.
Yes.
Hip-hop fan.
Yes.
An autism advocate. In that order.
In that order. Yeah. So we feel that we need to spend some time on our hip-hop faves because there's a lot of them.
Yes.
But we have one right now who is number one in both of our hearts.
Yes.
And that is
Megan Thee Stallion.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's Thee Stallion. Yeah.
No, not. It's T-H-E-E. Megan Thee Stallion.
Some real hot girl shit.
Some real hot girl shit. I'm a savage. Yeah. Classy, bougie, ratchet. And Veda and I were talking about this this morning and in lots of different inappropriate text message exchanges over the last week in terms of what are our favorite songs and why. And so we boiled it down to two. And we're going to give you our own unique perspective on why the song that we like should be the number one Megan Thee Stallion song. And I'm going to go first.
All right.
So my favorite.
That's usually the case.
My favorite Megan Thee Stallion song is Hot Girl Summer. And I know that this is not her most recent song. This song came out, I think, like over a year ago. But it's August of 2020. So technically, it's still summer. I thought it was appropriate. But I liked this song because if you read the lyrics and if you can get past, you know, maybe some of the offensive words, what it's really all about is having confidence. And I love that about Megan Thee Stallion. She's a very tall woman. She is curvy. She is bold. And I love this message for women. And so Hot Girl Summer, it's about having confidence. It's about having fun. It's about looking good while you're doing it. And also the beat is amazing. And it's abandoned my heavy rotation for a very long time. Also, we want to acknowledge that poor Megan was shot.
Oh my God. I was devastated until I heard that she didn't get shot in the ankles because my understanding is twerking is all in the ankles.
Yeah. So the ankles were spared.
Yes.
But this was also...
She needs to get them insured.
She probably does now. But this was also like an issue because, you know, this whole idea... that she felt like she wasn't being protected. Like she was like this black woman that was being shot and she was, you know, and now she said that it's Tory. Is it Lanez? Is that how you say his last name? So like one of her collaborators, she's saying is the one that shot her and that he's been denying it. And she's like, why don't you just own up to it? So I'm Team Megan all the way. And I want her to feel protected and loved and respected.
I don't want her to be shot by her friends. She needs to be protected from her friends.
But maybe she needs different friends.
Right.
But again, my favorite song, Hot Girl Summer, but that's just Sarah's take. Feta, give us your argument for your favorite song and why.
Okay. Well, I've had a lot of her, I really like her. But my favorite song right now is WAP.
WAP.
And
WAP.
WAP. WAP. Uh-huh. And I think the reason I like it is because they're just so liberated. You know, they do all the stuff that I can't do. They know how to twerk. I would love to be able to twerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to have that banging body. I would love to have the rap skills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they spit like nobody I know.
Yeah.
Right? And they're just freaking sexy, man.
Yeah. Let's be clear. WAP is a collabo with Cardi B.
Cardi B.
So Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion together is just incredible.
It's really good. And especially like during this pandemic, you know what I mean? it's like so nice to see stuff like videos that are still being made. You know, we're never going to go to the movies again.
Okay, Cardi B said that they spent $100,000 on COVID testing prior to filming that video.
Well, they really need it because they're all up in each other's faces.
All in each other's faces. I will say the outfits in that video are fire. The cameos in that video are incredible. I love it.
Of course, anytime. What do you call it? What's her name? Kylie Jenner. Kylie Jenner's in anything. I was like, oh my God, dude. But she's never had lip surgery, right? She's never had lip injections.
Oh yeah, she's had like
I thought she said she didn't have any plastic surgery.
I mean, I feel like, how do you operationally define plastic surgery? That's a conversation for another time. But I'm going to agree with you. The WAP video is an incredible visual artistry. And again, like, I love both Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion. Like, here's how multifaceted Cardi B is. She dropped that video. Do you know who she was talking to about healthcare last week? Joe Biden. Joe Biden. But I think that they are both like feminists for a different age, and I deeply appreciate both of them, but I'm still going to go with Hot Girl Summer is my fave.
Well, is it horrible that like anytime there's somebody that's like really famous out there, I want them to have a kid with autism or adopt a kid with autism because it'll just make the cause so much bigger. Like I know it's horrible and all of that, but God, if they had a kid with autism, man, we'd be set.
Yeah.
We'd be totally set.
I would. To have like a spokesperson. Yeah, like Megan Thee Stallion and or Cardi B.
Yeah, and or whatever. I was hoping, like a long time ago, I used to be like, well, what if Madonna or Angelina adopted a kid, like with autism? I was like, that would be cool. That would bring a lot of, you know.
But here's another way to think about it, though. What if we could also get to the place where someone wouldn't have to care about autism because they had a child with autism? They could just care about it because it's something that's important and meaningful to them. Like, I get it. Like, there's always, for so many people, there's a personal connection. But I would love for us to get to a place where people recognize that this is something that really deserves attention and care, and you can give a shit even if you don't have a kid with autism.
Well, this is the thing, is adults don't catch autism, all right? So it's not something that really they worry about in adulthood. They worry about Alzheimer's, they worry about dementia, they worry about Parkinson's.
And cellulite,
and things, and different kinds of cancers. So they put all their money into shit that they might get, but they're not gonna get autism. So I hear what you're saying, but I think it's harder when you adults who are the ones who vote and that may have the money don't get autism.
But I will say, sidebar, Amy Schumer's husband, for example, Chris Fisher, just found out that he's on the autism spectrum last year, and he was like 37 years old. So I think, by the way, there was a whole documentary where she documented her pregnancy. I know some people find her just be really obnoxious, but I think it was really sweet. And she's actually, I thought, had some really awesome things to say about how she loves her husband and how his autism has been, you know, sometimes really challenging for them.
I'm rolling my eyes right now.
She is rolling her eyes.
I am literally rolling my eyes.
You're rolling your eyes, but I still would encourage you to look and think, because he's in the documentary and he talks about it. She talks about it. I think it's neat to show love, and you can have love and relationship.
Oh my God, like Love on the Spectrum.
Yes. This is him.
This is Love.
This is their life.
Have you seen Love on the Spectrum?
No. On Netflix?
On Netflix.
Okay.
So I
watch list
for sure. I watched the first episode, and it was both hilarious and sad at the same time.
Why sad?
Sad because I was looking at like how hard it was for them to try to find a partner in a relationship. One of the people in there says his dream is to be a good husband. And I thought it was so sweet. Mm-hmm. But then I thought about Muhammad, who's probably never going to get married. You know, and so that was kind of sad for me. Mm-hmm. But the way they talk about it is just, you know, you can totally see where they're coming from. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, him and his love ducks.
Yeah.
Just watch the Love on the Spectrum and remember Love Ducks.
Okay. So we talked about Megan Thee Stallion. Yeah. You guys have to decide, you know, are you a Hot Girl Summer or WAP? Or frankly, you can just say I like them both, because honestly, they're both great jams. And Megan Thee Stallion is prolific. These are just a couple songs that she has, but we would really encourage you to check her out because she is fabulous. We also want to do another section of this podcast, and we don't know if we want to do this like every week, but definitely this week. We both have enough material that we wanted to talk about it, and it's called Can You Believe This Shit?
Yep.
Can you believe this shit? And Fade is going to kick us off with this because we talked about what you're about to talk about numerous times, and it's just like, are you kidding me?
Okay. So can you believe this shit? Can you believe that typically developing kids are going back to school to and teachers are going to be there to facilitate their distance learning. So essentially, you're going to have a bunch of kids on laptops, spaced out in classes, a teacher there, almost like a proctor, right? Mm-hmm. Just so they can get online, make sure they don't have any internet issues, all that shit. And I'm like, are you kidding me? My kid needs to go to school. He has a right to go to school. They have a legal obligation to put him back in school. And yet we're not opening. And schools are doing it so inconsistently. Like if you live in Marin, which is a very nice, rich area, guess what? Their schools have been open for mild to severe kids. You live somewhere else, they're lower, you know, performing district or whatever, they're not open. So I'm just like, I don't understand. Like we're bringing them in to facilitate that shit. And by the way, where is my Chromebook? Gavin Newsom problems everybody a Chromebook. My son doesn't have a Chromebook or a hotspot. Mm-hmm. So Gavin, if you're listening, I live in Fremont, California.
Well, and this also is something that we talked about in episode one. There is no consistency across anything. I mean, whether it's the Bay Area, whether it's the state of California, whether you're in Georgia or Oklahoma, there's no consistency. And time again, what we've not been prioritizing are children with special needs. And so I'm deeply fascinated to see the volume of lawsuits that are currently being filed and will continue to be filed as we, you know, kind of like, you know what this is like? Okay, so dealing with distance education and how we put our kids back to school, I'm going to say it's like seventh graders trying to like make out in the dark. No one knows what they're doing. Someone that like maybe like you get something caught on a braces. Like, where do you put your hands? Like, this is how we're dealing with education right now.
Yeah.
This is how we're dealing with education with seventh graders that don't know what to do with their tongues or braces or hands. And there's no lights.
Or mono. Okay, but you know what we should do? Oh my God, parents, listen. Take your kid and drop them off at your school with a laptop and be like, here you go. Facilitate their distance. I'm going to do that. I'm sure they're going to love that.
Right? But we all.
And if they don't, it's discrimination.
Yes. But let's do a shout out for districts that are doing it right. And you sent me something from Palo Alto Unified. Palo Alto Unified.
Opened up.
Yep.
And then they shut back down again, but I think they're going to open up. Marin Unified's been open for over 3 months. I haven't heard of any friggin' outbreaks there. Mm-hmm. There's a district in California that never shut down. Mm-hmm. It's in the Central Valley because a lot of those parents really didn't have internet at their house. And those kids were really not going to eat if they didn't go to school. So I get it. And like you said, the implementation's inconsistent, right? And you're getting paid to teach my kid. My kid ain't learning. Mm-hmm. So step up and teach my kid.
Yeah. So to be continued.
Yeah.
But again, we want to shout out Palo Alto Unified because they went even so far as to make a statement that we are prioritizing children that have the most intensive needs first over anything else.
Well, we should do that. We triage healthcare in this country. We should triage education.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is this about the teacher's virtual walkout?
What is that?
We're virtually protesting now.
What is that even? How do you virtually protest?
They're virtually
like you get on a Zoom and just leave?
Yeah, I guess.
So it's just like a screen looking at in your background?
Yep. It's called a virtual walkout because they don't want to go back to school. I'm like, you're not even in school.
I'm going to give that a virtual middle finger.
Right? And I'm giving it two.
Okay. For my thing on can you believe this shit? So Faye and I are both sitting here.
It should be you're not going to believe this shit.
You.
Not can you believe the shit?
Like
you're never,
I don't know, but like in 2020, I believe everything now because like it's so crazy. Nothing surprises me. We're sitting in downtown Oakland. It is August. What day is it today?
Like 24th.
It is. It's August 24th. You cannot see the sun outside right now because the wildfires that are burning everywhere in Northern California have effectively blocked the sun. I decided yesterday. That I wanted to make a nice family bonding activity for all of us to get out into the bay. I love sailing on the bay.
Where there's shitty air quality right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I had been communicating with the sail captain and I was like, hey, should we do this? You know, are we still going to have a fun time? Are we going to be able to see anything? And they're like, you know what? We think the air quality is going to be a lot better. Once we kind of get in the open bay, it should be fine. So we wrangle, you know, four preteens and teenagers early on a Sunday morning, which in and of itself is a miracle that everyone got out of the house. We get to this, you know, sailboat. It's smoky. Everyone gets on the sailboat. And of course, you know, like I told everyone, dress in 10,000 layers because once we get on open water, you're going to be cold. Yeah. None of them believed me. So they have these like, you know, thin, stupid athleisure shirts. And they're like, but I'm cold now. And I'm like, I don't know what
to tell
you.
That's her fault.
Yeah.
But I'm like, pack their jackets.
Yeah. I'm like, this is called a natural consequence. And so what I have pictures.
ABA that shit up.
I have pictures. So we have like the four kids like all huddled together, like on the you know, front of the sailboat. We went under the Bay Bridge. You couldn't even see San Francisco. And this should be like a sweeping view, right? You could barely, you know, see San Francisco. We go out to Alcatraz. You can kind of make it up, get out to Angel Island. And that's where you're really at the mouth of the bay. So it's like the wind is whipping. At this point, the kids are like moaning. And I'm asking everyone like, are you having a great time? And they're just like,
kids don't care about nature and shit. Like, I don't know why you thought that was going to be fun.
I thought that this was going to be like this bonding family experience. I like having activities, like get everybody outside. And
bond over food, just like the rest of America.
I don't, yeah. You know, and so like we get, eventually.
Sarah doesn't cook, by the way.
Yeah, I really, really don't. And that is just like, I'm not ashamed about it.
I'm ashamed for you.
I'm an amazing orderer of foods. Yeah. Anyone that knows, and if you go out to dinner with me, like, just let me order because I'm always going to order the really good food. But the reason I'm going to say, like, do you believe this shit about this trip is I think there's so many moms out there that are in the midst of this pandemic. We're just trying to have some normalcy for our kids. We're trying to still have, like, you know, experiences that will help bring us together as a family, do new things. You know, I can't even take my kids sailing. It was a socially distanced sailing. I paid an obscene amount of money to have a private boat to keep it safe. We can't even see the Bay Bridge. And we get back to the, you know, Oakland, to the docks. All the kids are like, I said, did you have fun? They're like, I guess. And so, you know what I did yesterday afternoon? I was like, you guys are all ungrateful. I took an hour and a half nap and I did some self-care because, you know, I was like, everyone is ungrateful. I thought this was going to be really great. It was totally, I still had a good time. My kids might have like black lung as a result of me.
So it's like COVID. It's like the plague. The smoke.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the locusts to fucking show up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm serious. It's like the what hit ancient Egypt.
Yeah. Like yeah. The Bay Area right now, like the San Francisco Chronicle literally ran an article yesterday. Like, is this the end for the Bay Area? Yeah. This is the end of
let my people go.
Yeah. So I took a nap. I took a nap. But that's my story of, can you believe this shit? Because of course you can, because any mother, you know, in the midst of trying to like do things that are meaningful and with ungrateful teenagers and everyone is just like so upset about it. You know, in the midst of a pandemic and wildfire and like,
I gave up on doing meaningful shit. I'm telling you, I gave up on that and I gave up on brushing my teeth. Like, it's been a while. You know what I mean? Ain't nobody got time for that. I ain't got time for that.
Oh my God. Sidebar really fast. Okay. So we talked about this in a previous episode, but I want you guys to understand this more. There is an entire legion, a secret life, the secret lives of autism moms.
Yeah.
And so Feta has all this insider access to swimming pools, to facials. What are the other things that you autism moms are doing? Because like, honestly, I want in.
Getting a haircut.
Haircuts.
And then if you come over, I'll give you a badge steam. Yeah, guys, you can like, that's so great, getting a badge steam. Something about it. You know, I don't believe in this shit, but the lady said it opens up your chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And I didn't believe any of that. And then after I did it, I remember going to a meeting, I think it was with the Autism Society. And every time somebody would say the word autism, I'd get choked up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, autism. You know, and I don't understand why. So I think it like, it does open something up
mm-hmm.
more than that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm going through a divorce, so I need to cleanse
all
my
of
ex out of all of that.
Yeah. But I'm just saying like, during this pandemic and now wildfires and whatever else 2020 is going to throw at us. Like
the murder hornets,
you know, I appreciate that like you and your girls are like holding it down for each other and having each other's backs because it's so.
Do you know people are renting out their pools for $45 an hour?
There's an app for it.
There's a swim leaf.
Yeah. There's an app.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So the autism moms definitely know that this sucks. And we've all like, basically I have this little contingent of autism moms who go to their pools.
Mm-hmm.
They come to my house, jump on the trampoline.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, social distancing is built into our kids' diagnosis.
Yeah. So you're not tripping about it.
I'm not tripping about it at all. So yes, shout out to my autism moms. I love you. And the ones that I don't know, I still love you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're going to be like serious. Well, not really, but we are going to talk about something that we hope is going to be meaningful for everyone, which is how to talk to your provider and whether that's ABA or speech or school. OT or school or your doctor
or your health plan,
anybody, so they can listen. And then I also want to spend a little bit of time specifically talking to the behavior analysts out there, because Feta, you have been working with behavior analysts for how many years? 10?
Way
or
too long.
12? And we have had innumerable conversations over the last decade that we've known each other since I never was a provider for Mood, just so people know that. Like, because I told Feta, I was like, girl, like, we can't be friends if I'm a provider. She's like, great, I'm scratching you off the list. And I think that there's a lot of stuff that we get right, and there's a lot of stuff that we get wrong, but we want to have a really open conversation, because what we're interested in is people being supported. We're interested in kids doing well. We're interested in people living their best lives. We're interested in decreasing the kind of stress, especially for autism parents. And we're interested in being partners with people. And this is, I think, something that's nuanced, and people don't know how to do it well.
Well, it's one thing for parents to talk about how to talk to your provider will listen, but also providers need to speak to parents in a way that they can understand.
Yes.
And sometimes I feel like we're speaking two different languages.
Yeah.
So I think it's both. It's not just how we talk to our provider. It's how they talk to us and how we're treated by them. Because if we're upset, there's a reason.
Right.
You know, the treatment plan might not be working, whatever it is. So people just think that, oh, we're these crazy autism moms, or these parents are just angry. But there's an underlying reason for that. And we need to get to the bottom of that. Why?
Right. And so another way to say that might be that there's a function for the behavior, right? And I know Feta's rolling her eyes at me. And I told her this episode, I was like, girl, I'm going to cite some research. And this is going to, we're going to get a little sciencey, you know, with a lowercase s, not an uppercase s.
Because once you say science, everybody just tunes out. Everyone wants to listen to that.
Excuse me. I'm going to make science palatable. I'm going to Neil deGrasse Tyson that shit and a thong.
All right,
you know what
ahead,
I'm saying?
Girl.
That's what I'm doing. That was a visual that I just put in my own head.
But I did
But I want to start here, because I was thinking about this morning when I was working out, because this is where I kind of like deal with all of the things going on in my head. And fundamentally,
can we say that you wake up like at 4:50 to work out?
Yes.
And I wake up at 4:50 to put on Dora the Explorer.
Yes.
Very different lives.
It's a very different life. But also for me, if I don't work out in the morning, it's not happening because of all of the other obligations that we have in our life professionally and personally. Like, it's not happening. Like,
I have 13 steps in my house. Going up and down them is enough to work out for me.
But do you get to 10,000 every day?
Who the frick cares, dude? It's like the rapture. We're about to die. I'm worried about my steps.
You're like, I'm just going to have a frappuccino.
Not even something else.
Go hit my vape pen and call it good.
Right.
Okay. But really, this is something that I was thinking about fundamentally, where I think that so many of the issues could be avoided is if we just spent time. I don't care if you're a provider. I don't care if you're a parent, if you're a BCBA or a speech therapist or an RBT, people want to be seen. And I think what we're not doing is we're not seeing each other. And when we don't feel seen, and again, and this is not sciencey. This is just something that I've experienced in my own life and
it's
with
human
my
behavior.
It's human. I mean, it's just we want to know that you matter. Mm-hmm. You, Feta, want to know that you matter. You want to know that Muhammad matters. You want to know that the things going on in your life matter. I want to know that I matter, and I want to know that the things that I'm talking about, or the things that I'm feeling, matter. And I don't think that we spend time enough as humans just seeing each other. Like, I'm looking at Feta, like, I'm looking in your eyes, and like, just taking the time to say, like, I see you in all, I acknowledge that you are a whole person that is multifaceted. Right.
Okay. And, well, I love that you're giving me eye contact, because as an autism mom, I don't get a lot of that. So I do appreciate it. But okay, I'm glad that you can see me as a whole person.
I do.
Okay. Now let's cut that and talk about like how to actually talk.
I got it. Okay. So one, what's the number one thing that pisses you off, especially from ABA providers? The number one thing. And we've talked about this before.
God, there's so many. Let me see. I was like,
using 5,000 words.
Oh my goodness.
To describe something that takes one sentence.
I have to post this somewhere. I got some progress report where literally it was 30 words used by this BCBA to basically say the colors are distracting to Muhammad. Mm-hmm. I like copied and pasted and sent it back. I was like, are you kidding me? And yeah. I like know a thing or two about behavior analysis. I was like, is this what you guys are giving to parents?
Yeah.
Or they're giving parents a 15-page behavior plan
yep.
that no one can implement.
Yep.
Which they're very proud of that they wrote it up with all the citations. But yep. yeah, nobody can implement that shit.
Right. So
a behavior plan's only as good as the person who's implementing it.
Right. So these are two important points that you bring up. One is the idea.
There's a little arrogance sometimes. I feel like.
Oh, you think sometimes?
Sometimes. Oh, they're like, oh, we know. We're the experts. You know, we know everything about autism. We can do feeding. We can do early intervention. We can do adults. We can raise Lazarus. BCBAs can do it all.
Yeah. So that's another point. So I want to kind of systematically okay. go through these. And just so you guys know, I have some articles that we'll link in our show notes. And also if you want to email us and we'll throw it up on Facebook too.
I don't read any of those articles.
All of these articles are important to me. Yeah. First, let's talk about the whole idea of our use of jargon and not being able to translate what we're talking about into layman's terms. I think that for a lot of behavior analysts, this is trained into them when they're in graduate programs, and people think that, oh my gosh, I can only be a behavior analyst if I only use technical terminology because this is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm like somehow diluting the science if I just can't speak in plain terms about something.
But nobody
and that's not true.
Tact. Nobody used the word tacting.
No.
Okay. It's not used in the right
word. Or an intraverbal or stimulus equivalence.
Yeah, but even it's like, oh, Muhammad tacted. He said something. Like,
right.
You know?
He identified something.
He identified something.
He said red. Got it.
Got it. Okay. Tacting.
So I would say I would really encourage providers, and there is ample literature. Like Tim Critchfield wrote a great article about this. Pat Fryman obviously has talked about this ad nauseum. Hey, if we want to be generally accepted and we want people to be interested in the stuff that we need to do, we need to talk to them in a way that they understand. And there's a time and place for using your technical jargon. And I would argue that that time and place is not with parents and not with people outside of the discipline, because that's also part of that whole arrogance thing. That also feeds into that view of a behavior analyst
well,
as being
geek
arrogant.
Out with other behavior analysts.
Sure.
You don't have to geek out with parents.
Sure. Absolutely. I also think there's a really old article. I mean, old, I think it was published in like 2000. It's the four functions of parental non-adherence. And I've always really liked this article because it takes a behavior analytic approach to why parents just won't do what we ask. And I will say, especially as someone that's been a behavior analyst for such a long time, that has worked with parents for such a long time, and has worked a lot of times with younger behavior analysts for such a long time.
There are only younger behavior analysts.
Yes, I think this is a really big growth edge. I have seen, and I don't know, Feta, I'd like to hear your personal experience. I've seen people get angry at parents and just be so upset. Like, why won't you just do what I ask?
Because you're 24 years old and I give a shit what you have to say.
Tell me more about that.
You know, you'll have these young people walking in, superimposing their values on you. And that's the problem, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, you're telling me what's important for Muhammad to do based on what you think is important to him, not based on what I think. Mm-hmm. Or actually, I actually appreciate even more. Even when I bring up things that I think are right for Muhammad, if you are able to say, well, why would that be important to him, not important for me, for him? Mm-hmm. Like, I appreciate you. Like, I'm hiring you as an expert. I would really like for you to give me a better understanding mm-hmm. about my son and his behavior and how we can work with it and what he can do and what he can't do and just all these things. You know what I mean? And I don't feel like I get that. I feel like, oh, don't you want your son to do chores? Don't you want your son to do whatever? I was like, my son is an Arab man. Mm-hmm. Okay. For better or worse, lots of Arab men don't do chores. His brother didn't do chores. His dad didn't do chores. His grandfather didn't do chores. He's not doing chores. Mm-hmm. Okay. So be able to understand that I don't do that in my house. Mm-hmm. Okay. 50-50 means something very different in my house mm-hmm. than a typical like American family where like the husband and wife maybe split things up or the partner split things up. For me, it's like, this is my husband, what he used to do. Mm-hmm. He used to, I cook, he eats, right?
Yeah.
I do the laundry. He makes the shit dirty.
Yeah.
But at the point there was also like, I'd go shopping and he'd pay for it. That's what 50-50 means in our house mm-hmm. or used to mean in our house.
Yeah. I mean, I know you were giving me shit about this earlier, mm-hmm. but it still goes back to the same thing that I said at the beginning of this conversation, because they're not seeing you. Part of seeing you is understanding your culture. It's asking you questions. What is important to you? What's important to your family? What's important for your son? And what I think is happening with a lot of behavior analysts, and this makes me sad.
You're right,
I think that they're terrified of making a mistake. I think a lot of the conflict that occurs between behavior analysts and parents isn't because a behavior analyst doesn't want to do a good job or doesn't want to listen to the family. I think they are honestly terrified of doing something wrong or sounding like they don't know what they're doing. And so it's like a panic.
So they use all these big words so we don't
know
any better.
So it's like they're like, okay, let me just spout all the stuff I've read about this. You know, I've heard this before. And also because the behavior analyst certification is a minimum qualification. It's a floor, not a ceiling. So you have people that have gotten this minimum certificate, of which this is the BA. I mean, this is not earth-shattering news. The BACB says this. You have people practicing behavior analysis that have met the minimum qualifications that likely need a tremendous amount more of supervision and mentorship, which I could talk about for the next 15 years. And so they are young practitioners that are inexperienced. They need more supervision and support and help. And so I think that they are like, this is what I learned in grad school. You know, I have, you know, perhaps like overgeneralized this procedure to other populations. I'm not necessarily engaging in the type of analysis that I need to do in order to make good decisions. And they freak out. And then what they do is lose families, and families don't want to work with them. How many times, I mean, you and I have been involved in cases before.
Oh my God.
Where we have had a significant conflict. And it's not because the behavior analyst didn't know what they were doing. It's because the behavior analyst did not have a solid relationship with the parent and was not listening to what was important to that family.
Okay, so there's this family. What was really important to them in their life, they wanted to go to church.
Yeah.
Okay? And I was like, all that he needs to do is they want to be able to go out to church, take their communion, everything, all like that, right? Which is important. It was important to be part of the family unit.
Yeah.
Right? So the BCBA was like, well, I don't know like how to do it. Like, I don't know how to make, how to go to church with him. You know, I could probably make him sit down for a few minutes. I was like, no, you teach that little shit to say Hail Mary and Our Father, because that's what's important to them. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So that's what they really need to understand. What is important to that family unit?
Right.
And I'm like smashing my teeth right now because.
Right. And that goes back to the whole idea that fundamentally behavior analysis is about social significance. And there's just like some basic questions that we have to ask ourselves when we're in practice. Does the behavior I'm teaching matter? And again, it isn't about mattering to me, Sarah. It's about mattering to my client, mattering to my client's family.
Yes.
Does it matter? And are my procedures appropriate and socially acceptable? Which means that needs to be acceptable to the family unit.
And does it work in that setting?
Right.
You know?
And are the outcomes, if I achieved, you know, an outcome or result, is what I'm doing, does it matter? And I feel like sometimes, again, we have a lot of young practitioners, they have, you know, kind of limited scopes of training. And so they go with what they know, and they don't know how to be behavior analytic about looking at what a client needs. And the other piece about this is they don't know how to display behaviors that are associated with like a good bedside manner. Another way you might talk about this is like compassionate care.
Yes.
Like, how do you show that you like give a crap to a family? Like, what are the things that you can say?
I saw this meme where they have the soda fountain, and one button was BCBA and the other one was also human, mm-hmm. and how they mixed it together. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like actually great. You know what I mean? Just like be a human.
Yes.
And don't be an asshole. Yes. How about that? As a rule of thumb for both providers and parents.
Yes.
Don't be an asshole. But you have to understand, coming from a parent perspective, it's not just that we're talking to BCBAs and these things. We're talking to the school district. When we yep. talk with the school district, we don't talk about what's medically necessary or what our hopes and dreams are. We talk about what's appropriate.
Yes.
When you deal with health insurance, you talk about what's medically necessary.
Right.
You know, when you talk to, say, regional center or another government entity, you know, you talk about what's how to keep them in their natural setting.
Right. Or habilitative or rehabilitative.
Well, that's medical. Like, who knows what that shit is, right? So you, as parents, we really do have to talk the different language, the different silos of funding.
Right. It's autism code switching.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. And you just have to learn how to do it. And I want to say something after working with so many providers and clinicians and everything, you know, nobody got into the field because they hate kids with autism.
No.
I just think that when you become part of this like repetitive bureaucratic system, you lose sight of that sometimes, you know? And I think what's really important, and I learned this lesson too, is that to bring it back to the kid. Mm-hmm. Remind them, hey, this kid, this is what you're in for. This is not, you're not here to fight with me, or I'm not here to fight with you. And you know what? It's not about me either. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I was angry, right? And I was making it about me because the school district pissed me off. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because they're messing with my kid for a reason, but still. And my anger, while it was valid, my response to what I was doing was not effective.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. And I just think it's really important for parents to just like try to take a step back and keep bringing it back to the kid, bring it back to the kid, remind them why they got into this business.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important.
I do too. And I think something that is competing with that, and this is going to be me speaking very frankly to people that run ABA agencies, is the idea that we are ruled by the billable hour. And there is a lot of pressure on behavior analysts, depending on the type of funding that you work with, especially if you're working with health insurance funding, whether that's, you know, Medicaid, Medi-Cal, or if you're working with commercial, there is a lot of pressure on behavior analysts to ensure that you maintain certain billable hours and that certain activities are billable, certain activities aren't. You have a caseload maintenance. And so what I see happening in the field a lot of times is that behavior analysts get consumed with ensuring that they're maintaining all of their billable hours because there might be salary tied to that or performance-based pay or some type of like, you know, aversive event that could occur if they don't, like an email from HR or from a supervisor. And that it's all about the billable hour. And it's and Faye and I were talking about this, we started recording. It's this whole idea that autism is big money.
Oh, big. When BC gets involved, it's big money.
It's big money. And if this is where we spend most of our time thinking, it's very easy to lose sight and to not see the families and the patients that you're working with. And so I would encourage people that are running ABA agencies to make sure that that is not the, you know, the number one priority that you have. I don't mind if people make money doing something that is meaningful for other people.
They're making money. Mm-hmm. Nowhere else have I seen somebody graduate from school, be able to open up their own agency. Okay, get credentialed. Mm-hmm. They buy like, it's called an agency in a can online, mm-hmm. all their manuals, everything. And they start serving all kinds of clients, mm-hmm. right? So you have to have, this is the requirement to open up an agency. You have to have a BCBA.
Which is a minimum certificate.
The minimum. This is the minimum. And you haven't killed anybody and you don't have TB. There you go. Now you can open up an agency and you can serve a bunch of vulnerable kids.
Mm-hmm. And so while we applaud people that are entrepreneurs, just because you can doesn't mean
you should. That's the truth.
Doesn't mean that you should.
And we've had this, like, is some ABA better than no ABA? Is, you know, a little bit of bad ABA, you know, how does the grand scheme of things, is just all these kinds of questions. And honestly, Sarah, like, you know, I helped pass the law in California, and I will tell you there are times when I rued the day that law was passed. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many kids out there getting shitty therapy, mm-hmm. truly shitty therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, I didn't fight for this. But then I look at the same time, it's like, you know what? The kids that are, even if they're getting shitty therapy, at least their parent can take a shower.
Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't be like that. Mm-hmm. But like, I try to look at it that way. At least these kids have somewhat of a chance. But it's so hard to measure the quality. And there's no standardized way to be like, okay, here is the outcome. This is because all the goals are individualized, mm-hmm. you know? And again, it's a very tricky type of business because you're going into somebody's house.
Especially, yeah, in California, not in all other states, but California especially is very heavy on home-based services.
Yeah. And insurance companies can't stand that. They're like, oh, we don't make house calls anymore. But in fact,
yeah,
it's all in the home.
Well, now in COVID, we don't really make house calls anymore either.
Yeah, you're on the computer. An RBT is on the computer trying to give a kid ABA instructions, whatever. Such bullshit.
So what I want practitioners to hear out of all of this are a couple things. One, please don't lose focus on why we're doing this. And ultimately, we're doing things because we're a helping profession and we want to alleviate human suffering. And that is...
That sounds super philanthropic.
But it's the truth. Because if we have a different perspective, we work with humans. we're working with humans that are in pain or they are having crappy quality of life. We're working with parents that are in pain. All of us are in pain in some way, but especially for kids with autism and their families, there is a lot of pain and suffering that happens. And I think that behavior analysis can be an incredible pathway to help alleviate some of that. Can we do everything?
As long as we keep it to the billable hours.
But that's what I'm just saying, but fundamentally, that's where your headspace needs to be at. Yes, you have, you know, all of the business of, you know, the business of ABA, which is an entire other topic that we'll tackle at a different time.
You can do that episode yourself.
But these are humans. We're all humans. And being able to consistently and always be open to learning new things, being able to continue to make sure that the people that you're working with, the families, whether they're parents or guardians or aunts, their uncles, patients, you know, school systems, wherever, whatever setting that you are working in, making sure that you are engaging in behaviors, using assessments, asking questions, where we're really keeping the social significance piece at the forefront is critical. And if you don't know something, then you need to ask for help. Because trying to shove something down someone's throat because you don't have the answer on how to help their kid go to church, right? Like, I've never done a program to teach Hail Marys. I'm not going to say that to you because I want to save some face. So I'm going to do something else. And then now I've lost the family because they're like, why aren't you doing the thing that's most important to us as a family?
And I think that's something that I would like practitioners out there to really understand. You know, I heard something from an incredibly smart psychiatrist who said, when I'm prescribing med to a kid, and the kid comes in and can't tell me kind of what's going on, I look at the parent. Mm-hmm. And then I know if the medication's working. Does the parent, how is their affect? What do they look like? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? All of that stuff. He goes, that's how I know it's working. And I feel like if parents are upset or angry, and I'm not saying there aren't some asshole parents out there, absolutely, okay? Mm-hmm. But if they're upset or angry, that means the intervention's not working. Mm-hmm. And it's not helping them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to understand. Really, you'll know that it's working. And if it's not working and they're upset and it's been like that for a minute, it's probably because they don't trust you because it hasn't worked forever. And they can't leave you because there's a 7-month waiting list mm-hmm. to get to another provider. Mm-hmm. And how do you even know if you go to that provider, you're going to be better off? Yep. But parents are on their 20th RBT in 3 years.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Everybody asks me, like, what agency do you recommend? Do you recommend this agency? Do you recommend that agency? I say, you're only as good, an agency is only as good as their frontline providers. Because mm-hmm. that's the most contact.
Right.
So I really do believe that. It's not about the BCBA. The BCBA is important. They need to know their shit. But they also need to be able to train people so they can implement it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to train those RBTs how to be compassionate, how to talk to the parents.
Yeah.
You know, not just to show up and take off their shoes. Because it's culturally sensitive. Yeah.
No.
You can wear your shoes in my house.
No, I agree. And so that comes down to systems. It comes down to training. It comes down to values. And the point that I wanted to make on this topic is, especially for practitioners, if you aren't taking care of yourself and you're not don't know how to allow yourself to have, or you can't create a compassionate space for yourself, you're not going to be a great provider. Just like, I mean, even for us as parents, like if I can't be in a good place with myself, I'm going to be a crappy parent because I'm judging myself. I'm angry at myself about doing things and I'm going to be more apt to be short with my kids or have a snappy response.
Well, they say when you're in like the airplane, right? The oxygen mask drops down, put it on yourself first before you put it on your kid. Mm-hmm. Right. And then if you're traveling more than one kid, look down, see who has the most potential to put yes. on that one first. You know, it's just like really hard because again, we're always triaging our care.
And yes,
my self-care is at the way bottom
right.
of that.
And I'm on a journey in 2020, girl, to make sure that we're working that from the basement of your list.
Right. All the way up to the top.
All the way up to the top.
Right.
And so the last article yeah. that I'll encourage you guys.
Workout.
That's fine. But self-care means different things for different people. So that's not your value. Girl, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't like to raise my heart rate.
But I want to say there's a really great article that came out in Behavior Analyst in Practice, written by some women that I have a lot of respect for. Julia Fiebig, Siri Ming, Evelyn Gould, and Rebecca Watson. And it was this whole idea on an invitation to act on the value of self-care and being a whole person in everything that you do. And I would encourage you to read it. It's free. I'll link it to the show notes. But I'm telling you.
And for the parents who don't know who these people are, because most of you guys don't, they're like really supposedly good behavior analysts.
They are. They are good behavior analysts. And I think this article actually is, I think there's universal applicability to this. It's not like some like heavy jargon stuff. It's basically saying this, like, if you don't value yourself and you don't know how to take care of yourself and you can't give yourself a break, how are you supposed to be effective in anything that you do? I've summarized it for you now. So if you don't want to read it, you don't have to. But again, I think that this makes—
Did you hear that? I told you BCBAs can do anything. They can't just teach your kid adaptive living skills. They can also teach you how to care for yourself.
Sure. Acceptance and commitment therapy, man.
Oh, whatever, dude. That's not the new shit right now.
It's not. I am telling you, it is grounded in some stuff that I think is incredibly effective. But again, like, I don't think that you can be a good practitioner. I don't think you can be effective. And I don't think you can be a good parent or anything in anything you do in life, unless you can give yourself some self-compassion and value being a whole person. I mean, that's just—
Can we have people write to us and tell them what they, you know, like what BCBAs wish that parents knew, or like maybe the worst parents' stories that they've heard, and parents write in the same thing. Like, give us the—
Ooh, like an anonymous submission.
Or don't be anonymous. Oh my God, you can be our pissed off mom of the week.
Oh, pissed off mom of the week. Okay. Yeah. But the only— yeah, I'm fine with that. But then we need to have like something of like, how do we fix this? Right. Cause like, I don't want to do it. I mean, it's fine. Like,
don't be an asshole.
Sure. But the devil's in the details.
So yeah, don't be an asshole.
So like, we can talk about how not to be an asshole. We can do the piss off parent of the week. Ooh, what is that acronym? POPOW. Pop pow. I'll think about it. We'll post it on parent of the week.
Let's just call it pow.
Pow.
Yeah.
Pow.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll figure that out.
Or pop.
Okay. So thank you for listening. And that's
the scoop. And it's not about ice cream.